Welcome to That Season Air podcast. I'm your host, Gina. Stick with me as I chat to season airs, expats and adventurers across the world, sharing their inspiring stories and interesting insights into living and working abroad. On today's show, I catch up with season air and snowboard coach, John Marion. Having completed several seasons over in Morzine, John decided it was time for a trip to Asia to go and find himself. It was there where he found a psychedelic experience which led him on a path to follow his passion and become a snowboard instructor.
Well, we've got no snow, no snowboards, no hill, and you need to teach them how to snowboard.
What?
I was like, okay.
Listen right to the end of the show to hear John's experience of being dropped right in the deep end whilst coaching the Chinese Olympic snowboarding team, as well as John's advice and recommendations to help you on your next journey. If you enjoy the podcast and want to show your support for the show, you are now able to buy me a coffee via the link in the show notes. And without further ado, here's the show. Welcome to the show, John Marion.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah.
In this how you doing?
Very legit studio.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure.
Tell us a little bit about you. Where are you from?
I'm from the Midlands, West Midlands, Bloxwich by Birmingham, where Peaky Blinders is from.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
So not too many mountains there. That's not great, but it's a nice place.
Cool. And what got you into travelling in the first place? What got you into sort of seasons?
I was trying to think about this earlier to try and think what really got me started, but I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. I did school and then went to sixth form, and the only reason I did sixth form was because my friends were doing it, and I was like, I don't want to finish school yet. This is too fun. I went from there to working for my parents' business. They're estate agents. Yeah, I worked for them for like a year and a half. 2 years maybe, whilst I was at sixth form and also a little bit after.
Right, okay.
And just, I don't know, like it didn't sit very well with me being in an office. Yeah, just like there's got to be more to life than this. And I don't know, obviously you see all kinds of mad stuff on the TV or on the internet of things people do. And you think, well, I want to do something like that.
When you were in school, what did you want to be when you were older?
I already didn't know. People go into university and think, well, how can you decide at this point in your life to put all that time and money into something? I don't have any clue. I knew sixth form and uni, a lot of guys do Camp America. That's like a thing mm-hmm. that is advertised to people because obviously they do it in the summer, don't they? Or yeah. when they're off from university or something. So that was the first being marketed to me, I suppose, at that time. I was like, well, yeah, that could be cool, right?
Yeah.
So that was the first venture into it. I think it might have been a girlfriend I had at the time. She was half Thai and she was always chatting about like travel and stuff. And it kind of like turned me onto it a little bit. I used to go on holidays with my family and it would be to Spain all the time. And then I remember once they were like, oh, let's go to Egypt. And I was like, oh, no, I don't want to do that. And then I realized, I was like, no, that's sick. I get to go somewhere totally unique. And family did the all-inclusive, but then me and my brother went and did like a little trip to Cairo and saw the, is it Cairo with the pyramids?
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. And yeah, so that just sort of sparked it up from there, I think. Just like the wonder of foreign places, isn't it? Like, yeah.
Cool. So your first trip away, was that to Camp America, you said?
Yeah, so that was my first bit of like traveling to get me started.
And how old were you then?
Just came out of school. So I was pretty young, 18, 19, something like that. So yeah, I did the, went to the little thing that they do advertising it, and they kind of help you through the whole process. And it's a service, you pay them and they do all the visas and fly you out, help you pick the camp that you work at.
Right.
Yeah, it's the best way to get started, isn't it? Something like that. That's totally helps you out from end to end. You might have to pay a little bit more, but relieving the stress and whatever, it's totally
much
easier. Yeah,
especially when you're a bit younger as well. It's sort of a
good
thing to do.
But yeah, I was like too young and like it was too much too soon, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, right, when you actually did it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what happened then? Tell me all about it.
Well, I mean, it was me and I was like still with my girlfriend at the time. And like,
your girlfriend wasn't going with you.
And now she wasn't going with me. And she was like, okay, oh yeah, of course, go and do it. And like, you know, go and live the life. But then as soon as I was there, she was like, oh, I watched Beaver Falls. Is it Beaver Falls or whatever? Or Beaver, that's like an E4 program about summer camps and they're just all having sex and stuff. And
oh,
and she was like, oh, you know, what are you doing? And like, just not on board with it as soon as I was there. So that was a contributing thing. I was just like stressed out about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then just like the idea of being in the camp that was just like totally couldn't get out of the camp. Like you had to speak to someone and like get a lift if you wanted to go out. And it was all quite insular like. And that like stressed me out at the time. I wasn't ready for that kind of thing. Like I was, when you're traveling, you got to be like open and adaptable to loads of different things, haven't you? Like,
yeah, for sure.
And you could learn, you'd learn it in the process of traveling, but you have got to be ready for that, just going with the flow, and you've got to be comfortable in yourself to be in a totally new environment, haven't you? So
yeah.
I just wasn't ready for that, like, and it like stressed me out a lot, sparked off anxiety and stuff.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So
wow.
It's like my, you know, X Factor sob story.
it's a good way to put it.
Yeah, like, it's a long time. I mean, that's like 10 years ago. What did I put? 2012 as the...
2012, yeah.
So that's almost 10 years ago now, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I basically, like, had counselling, which I'd recommend to anyone if they have the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of looked at myself. I was being someone else to impress other people. That happened. It went wrong. I looked at myself, sorted myself out. Then I was ready to re-emerge into the... traveling worlds like a phoenix.
Yeah, okay, good. So you had some counseling to deal with sort of the anxiety side of things, did you?
Yeah, it's like social anxiety or low self-esteem and like being someone that I'm not, to try and impress other people. And then I realized if I was just being myself that people find that way more endearing, and like the people that I've met that I thought were the most awesome people I've met were the people that had the balls to totally be themselves. And
yeah,
that's the most endearing quality that you can have, to be yourself. So I realised that. So it was
an expensive
way to learn, I suppose. But I'm glad it happened then, early in life, because then I could get through the rest of my life just living it to the fullest. Like,
what advice would you give to anyone who wanted to go and do the Camp America? Because obviously lots of people do go and do it and they enjoy it and they can cope with that. What is a piece of advice you could perhaps give from your experience that might help someone else?
America's different. You see it on the TV all the time, but like, I had a culture shock there just because you've got such expectations of what it's going to be like. And you have to look at where the camp is, because they present a lot to you, I suppose, the companies. But yeah, you got to do your own research as well for yourself, because they're obviously trying to sell a product as well. So everyone's always like, yeah, do this, do that. This will be sick. This will be great. Have a look into it. Obviously, that's always a good way, isn't it? It's easily done now with the internet. You can read up on things, you can find people on social media. And I didn't do that for that particular thing in Camp America, but for other things I've done in the future, I'd use Instagram to look at who people who are doing that currently, and you can even just message them and talk to them about it.
So after Camp America, where did you head to next?
I was getting myself better after a turbulent time. I just wanted to get used to putting myself in different environments, different situations, and build back up to it. Like, so I suppose after an injury, you don't go like straight back to doing the crazy stuff that you were doing. You got to build up little by little, because you don't want to set yourself back. And it's the same with your mental health as well, I suppose. You've got to build up things. So I just traveled around UK. I like to BMX. That's like my first love. I used to do it when I was younger, just, I suppose that kind of started the love. Like, I just get on a train when I was a lot younger and go to a new city and go to a new skate park, and just that discovery is such a good feeling. Like, so
cool.
I did that again in England, stayed over at different places and just got used to getting out of my comfort zone again. And then I went on two ski holidays with the school, and it was just the greatest time ever. Like, I remember saying that it was the best day of my life, because it's awesome, isn't it, obviously.
So you went on two ski holidays Where did you go?
One was in Wagrain, because I remember it because it sounds like Wagwan.
Where's that?
It's by, we drove past it. We went to Absolute Park this season.
Ah, okay.
In Salzburg, is that? And we drove past a sign for it, so it must be around there somewhere.
Right.
And then the other place, a Rizol, which could have been France, could have been Austria as well. Rizol, I don't know. I remember that. And it was an amazing time. First time skiing. Yeah, just blew me away.
So you were skiing?
Yeah, that was skiing, because you couldn't do snowboarding then with the school, because I don't know, it was still pretty new or whatever. And it was just like, you do skiing with everyone else. Like,
yeah.
I was just telling the instructor the whole time, like, when can we do tricks? Like, when can we do jumps and stuff? Like, but yeah, so I did that. After I traveled the UK, I was like, if I could only spend 1 week a year doing BMXing, then I'd be rubbish at it. Like, I wouldn't even touch the surface of it.
Yeah.
I need to spend like a whole season doing it. I wanted to commit myself to it fully and just see what I could do with it. If someone said, right, you can only do it for a week every year, then it's...
Progression's going to be pretty slow.
Yeah. You're only going to get a very small part of what that's all about, aren't you, really? So I must have found it off the internet, the Alpine Elements English tour operator. I think I just searched Google for it, and they were doing a group interview in up north somewhere. I remember going there, and then there's like a private, you know, one-to-one interview.
Yep.
I remember saying, like, oh, I want this so bad. Like, I was super nervous and just like, yeah, I remember saying to the guy, like, oh, this needs to happen. Like, and he's like, don't worry about it, mate. You know, you got more to you than some of these. I was just super nervous about it. You know what I mean? He's like, no, it'll be fine. Like,
what was the job for?
It was just employing for the whole of Alpine Elements. Like, so it's kind of just like rock up. And,
yeah. Okay.
And then you did like a training week in this big hotel. Everyone that got employed got to train together, and then you got sent off to all the different resorts that they operated in.
Right. So you didn't know at that point where you'd be placed or what you'd be doing. You just went to see if you had the kind of skill set to go a bit further.
Yeah. Cool. So again, it's like a company that sort of looks after things end to end. There could be some downsides to it.
Mm-hmm.
Might not be as profitable, or it might cost more money. But when you're first getting started, it's invaluable to have that like helping hand. And yeah, so we did the training week. And then I remember seeing one of the hotels had a ski shop included in it. And I was like, oh, that's good. Like, you'll be able to get my snowboard service at work. So that was just why I picked it.
Okay.
And that was in Morzine in France.
So part of the process is you pick where you want to go, or they pick for you.
I mean, it was cool. It's like an X Factor type thing.
Okay.
You've got all the different managers from all the different hotels or chalets, and they're kind of picking like football teams or whatever. Like, so I saw the place that I'd like to go to. I figured out who the manager was of that place, and then I was just like sucking up to her the whole time. to try and get to that place, like,
class.
Yeah.
It worked.
Yeah. And then I ended up staying in Morzine for 5 years, like, so.
Wow.
Yeah. It had a hold on me for sure. Like,
with the position at Alpine Elements, did you get anything included with that?
Yeah. So that's what was so good about it. You get everything included. You wouldn't have to think about anything. They'd drive you out in a coach, put you up, you get your training. Then you get your lift pass, you get health insurance for when you're on the mountain, you get ski rental, and you got your food as well, depending whether you're a chalet host or I was a hotel host. So I'm terrible at cooking. I was definitely terrible at cooking back then.
Mm-hmm.
So I just did the cleaning and the waitering, and then the chefs would cook food for us as well as the guests. So everything totally covered. So
you were in Morzine for 5 years, you said. You must have really enjoyed it there.
Yeah, it's a pretty awesome place. Like, yeah.
What other jobs did you do in Morzine?
First season, winter season, was at Alpine Elements. Then in the summer, I stayed in Morzine and worked as a bike mechanic as well. Because it's like a mountain biking resort as well as a ski resort.
Had you done that before? I guess because of your BMXing, you...
Yeah.
Knew
so
a
I
bit
said,
about
I,
it.
Yeah, I knew a bit about it, but BMX is a very simple. They've just got like a chain, and mine didn't have any brakes, you know, it's super simple. So I was like, yeah, no, I do the mechanics on my bike all the time, and
I wasn't a very good bike mechanic. Yeah, sometimes the customers would come check to see how the bike's getting on, and I'm using YouTube videos whilst doing like bleeding the brakes or something. That was a bit of winging it, which is definitely a big part of life in general, I suppose, but also traveling and finding, you know, in new environments, you just got to sort of wing it. Yeah.
That's what I'm doing right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, it works. Yeah.
It seems to. It gets you where you need to go at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But going back to your first season, did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's.
Give us a kind of overview of how that season went.
Oh, well.
And what age were you at that time?
That would have been when I turned 21, I think, was my first season. So I was 20, 21. You don't get paid a lot when you work. I mean, it's changed now. It's a shame because, like, I'm telling my experiences, but it's changed a lot now with Brexit and also the laws in European ski resorts for working and things like that have changed. But when I was there, we get paid like very little. Mm-hmm. But obviously, we had all that stuff included that I mentioned, living on a budget. But you had everything took care of. You'd work in the morning, quick as you can. As soon as you'd done your job, you could finish. You snowboard all day. And then, I mean, you know, from being a ref, like,
yeah.
So yeah, loads of time on the mountain. You get really close with the people that you work with, like lifetime friends from that first season. Like, I mean,
yeah,
I make lifetime friends, I suppose, on most of the places that I go, but especially your first season, like it's opens your eyes to that lifestyle. And yeah, great.
What's the best thing about Morzine?
The best, oh, wow. Well, I'd say the Stash for me. It's a snow park.
Right, okay. What is that?
Yeah, the Stash. Well, it's a secret. Yeah, no, for me, it's the actual terrain in Morzine, like the Stash is this snow park that's built in Avoria that's made it totally out of wood. And it's like the whole side of a mountain. Like there's like three or four runs that run through, and it's all wall rides and rails and jumps and whatever. You can ride it on a pale day because it's in the trees. I don't know, man. Like, that's what I miss all my friends there. But I also, that's some pretty fun times in there as well. It's a year-round town as well. It doesn't get quite so sleepy in the interseason. You know, the summer's a big thing there as well.
When you arrived there, you said you'd only done 2 ski holidays, right? No snowboarding yet.
Oh, well, I went away with my brother to Andorra on a little holiday snowboarding. And I did like a learn to snowboard course in Tamworth, where I live. I don't know why I thought I had to do snowboarding over skiing. I just figured if you wanted to do tricks, which I was such a fan of because of BMXing, then snowboarding's the way to go. Like, I think back then, the snowboarding was all about tricks and skiing wasn't so represented in doing freestyle. Whereas now, if they're both equal. You get a lot of people just doing freestyle skiing. I could probably have got into that. I was surprised by some people that start a season and they hadn't even skied before. I was like, as if you come in here and you don't even know if you're going to like it. Like, yeah, they never even skied before or snowboarding. I'm like, but you know, it worked for them and they got into it and loved it.
A lot of these jobs promise free ski or snowboarding lessons as well, included with the package.
Yeah, fair play to them. Just being like, yeah, we're going to try it out. Like,
so you stayed for the summer and you're a bike mechanic. How did you get that job?
Well, I was already in Alpine Elements, so they're kind of advertising for the summer.
Right, okay.
And it was the same hotel that I worked in the winter. So that opportunity came along. I had to like be interviewed and stuff, but yeah, blagged it. So, I mean, Morzine's more well-known probably to a lot of people for the mountain biking in the summer than it is for the winter. Yeah, they were like one of the first ski resorts to take on mountain bike parks and stuff like that. So it's pretty massive for English tourism as well, like UK people in snow sports, but also mountain biking as well. Like,
cool.
After the summer season, I knew that I wanted to return to Morzine. Once you get settled in a place, you start to meet people, you get to know the lay of the land.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you feel more comfortable finding your own job maybe or finding your own place. I mean, people might come to resorts and straight away do that, but
yeah.
I'd settled then and I felt comfortable to do that. So I was looking for a more like local job, not just an English tour operator. Like, yeah, so I was applying for a bar position. I was there in the summer and I was applying for that winter. So that's like a good leg up on applying for the winter. If you're already there, You can be going into places, and in these like ski towns, it's not very often that they want to see your CV. They just want you to come in and speak to them. Or like if you want to work in a bar, they want to see you in the bar all the time anyway, because you're just always going there to drink. And I ended up working at the Sherpa bar in Morzine. It's like a small bar there. And the owner, he was just trying to sell the place. In the end, I arrived last minute and he was like, oh, it turns out I don't own it anymore. I've sold it to these guys. So you haven't got a job anymore, but you can stay in my accommodation and continue to look. And maybe the guys that have took over might be interested. So in the end, I got to know these guys and they employed me. But these guys were from Essex and they were like geezers. I ended up working for them and they were like super all about like optimizing the bar, grafting loads of hours, techniques to get guys to buy more drinks. You know, if you get a guy with a girl, you can like try and emasculate him into buying more drinks than he wants
to. Wow.
You know, all those techniques. He was just really on the, obviously in London nightclubs or whatever, he was highly on that vibe when, you know, a ski town like Morzine doesn't really, it's not really like that. You know, it's a lot more chill. That was a challenge. It was a lot of hours and it was intense being behind the bar initially. I'd never done anything like that, but it was an amazing experience to be a barman in a ski town. Like, you know, it's pretty wild. I definitely got a taste of that. You know, I'd recommend it to people. There's a second season there and it was a really good way of making more connections. But yeah, these guys were like all about crazy work ethic and all this and didn't really suit the season air vibe. It turned out that they were money laundering through the bar and they ended up firing me because the girl that this guy really likes liked me and I ended up getting with this girl and he was just like...
You got with your boss's missus?
Well, no, it wasn't his missus. She was not interested at all because she's just like a down-to-earth snowboarder girl.
Ah,
and he's
okay.
Like, oh, all right, girl, I'll buy you a, you know, Gucci jacket and, you know, a Gucci snowboard or whatever. And she's just like, you know, how about you actually talk to me like a normal person? Like, and he found out about us being together and he was like, I've been keeping your job here because you're my friend. But after what I've found out, you're not my friend anymore, so you're fired. And yeah, it was ridiculous, man. I was still young at the time and I was in tears afterwards. Aww. I was like, you know, I was trying my hardest. Like I did like a lot of promotion, did like nights and stuff. I was just like, you know, ridiculous. They were terrible people, man. And they ended up not buying the place. The thing didn't go through and it's still owned by the original owners.
Oh, really?
But it was a crazy year. He did pay me well for all the hours I did do. I just ski bum the rest of the season, which then opened my eyes to how amazing that is. You know, just not working. Yeah. And then, no, you know, having a holiday that lasts for like months.
That is awesome that you, I mean, it's not awesome that you got fired, but it's awesome that you were then able to experience the mountains in a different way. So it's a really good thing.
And
that
I suppose those things, I mean, those things can happen in the UK as well, can't they? I suppose. But maybe when you're in foreign lands, it's a bit rogue, isn't it? Sometimes there's not as much regulation. But you get through it and it's all part of the excitement.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, when you think of it like that, when you're back home, you do have a bit more security in the job. You know, people can't just fire you and get away with it with no warnings and things like that. And because you've got with a girl,
you've
got a lot more security. But yeah, it can happen like that. It's interesting to think of it.
But then it works both ways. Things can get sorted out easily as well. It's just a bit more person to person as opposed to being like businesses and contracts and stuff like that. Present day, like I've decided to live in an Austrian ski resort for different reasons. I don't know, thinking about the future and like in Austria there's such high altitude ski resorts, lift pass that covers hundreds of different places and you've got glaciers included. So I'm looking to the future of like climate change and stuff. Like that higher altitude definitely makes me feel a bit more safe in the knowledge there's going to be a bit more snow around. Whereas Morzine's a bit of a lower down, great resort. And it is connected to the Port de Soleil, which is a massive ski area that does go to higher altitudes, but there's no glaciers around in that area. It's quite a while to anywhere like that. And yeah, my experience of Morzine was back before Brexit. and quite a lot while ago now, like talking what 5-6 years ago, you know, a lot of English tour operators and things, and the industry's going through massive change now with COVID and Brexit as well.
Mm-hmm.
And also that the changes in the laws, like in France and in Switzerland and Austria. I don't know if they've done it in Austria, but started in Switzerland, I think, because they didn't want to have foreigners doing jobs for really low money, because that doesn't mean that the locals have got a chance doing those jobs, because they aren't going to want to do it for such a small amount of money. So all these things together are going to change the landscape of the ski industry and like the UK involvement in it. But there's still a huge amount of UK, you know, British people, English-speaking people in Morzine doing all kinds of businesses. Maybe in the future it's going to change to be like a lot more Europeans working in the ski resort. Kind of like Austria, isn't it? A lot of Eastern Europeans come to work for work. That might change. But there is still a lot of UK-owned businesses in Morzine. So I do hope that things can evolve and adapt to weather the storms and offer the same opportunities that I had. It's a different landscape, but people overcome and adapt.
So after Morzine, what happened next?
I did the Find Yourself in Asia thing. And when I got there, I was surprised at how much of a sesh it was as well. Like, I didn't realize. I thought it was going to be all eat, pray, love, you know, spirituality, cultural experiences, which it can be as well, but I was just surprised at like how much of like Magaluf it could be as well. So
have you been to Magaluf?
I've never been there, no, but you know, it's just one of them, like a lot of partying. So I love that. Asia, I love the food and just the culture. You know, the West is all about doing more, faster. The East, a lot more about spirituality and taking time for yourself, you know, to enjoy things or whatever. Like,
and how long did you go for?
I went for a few months. I suppose there's websites that are recommending like how you're budgeting, how much you'd need to spend, how much time there. I started in Thailand, but it was outside of the prime season because I didn't want to miss the winter season. So I think the winter is a good time to go to Asia, Southeast Asia, because that's like the sunniest time. But I didn't want to miss out on the snowboarding as well. It's a good life I lead. I'm blessed. I started with Thailand, but the weather wasn't so great, so went to Indonesia quite quick and the weather was better there. It's a super well-trodden tourist trail again in those places. I thought it was still quite, you know, foreign land, but it is a friendly place to go as a new backpacker type thing. It's a good circuit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's well established. You know, you wouldn't have much trouble getting out into that as someone on your own, or, you know, with people. Like,
when you said you were doing your internet searches and things, did you go through a company to do that, or did you just kind of work it out yourself and budget and just get advice from your Google searches?
At that point, I suppose I was done the traveling a bit more and I was more comfortable to just sort of figure it out myself. There are companies that do it again, but then, the stress that I would save from using them didn't pay off like it did before, because I felt like I had the confidence and experience to just sort of figure it out.
And
it was scary initially, but then you soon realize that when you arrive at a place, they see you as a Westerner and they're like, let's go to him because he's got money. You know, because it is, that's the way it is. Like, it's you're instantly looked after. You can get off a train in somewhere totally foreign, people are like, you need a hotel, taxi, come to me. It's all sorted. It's not like that everywhere, but on that tourist trail, they're ready for that kind of thing, so they look after you. So, it's not what I thought it was. Still amazing.
Yeah.
But a lot easier than I thought it was. And I went with my girlfriend at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like, I don't know, like, it happens. You meet someone on a season and then the season comes to an end and you're like, what do you do now?
So you met your girlfriend in Morzine?
Yeah, so it was the end of the Morzine incident. I met her
there.
Was
it the same girl as the boss liked?
Yeah, that one, yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, lovely girl, Rebecca, shout out. We went together.
Oh, cool.
Because you're at the end of the season, you're like, what do you do? You don't want to... She was Irish and she didn't want to go back to Ireland. She wanted to carry on traveling. So it's like a thing that's happened to me multiple times where you get to the end of the season, you're like, well, what do we do together? Like, we don't want to just call it a day.
Yeah.
We don't want to go back to our respective homes together or separately. You know, and we were both keen to do the Asia thing. So it was like, it was both our goals to go individually. So it was like, let's go together. So we went together. But then, like, when I was there, I was like, oh, I don't know, like, I didn't want to be together.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So.
Poor Rebecca.
Yeah, like, I've got Jip off friends about it. Like, I broke up with her whilst we were travelling.
Right.
But then other friends, you know, said, it's cool because we both wanted it independently. We both wanted that, not as a together thing as well, just as our own thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I broke up with her in Vietnam. And she's still there to this day.
What?
Yeah. I mean, you could get her on the podcast, to be fair.
If you want to nominate her later on, yeah. You can do that for sure.
Because we're still friends and, like, she loves it in Vietnam. She's been teaching English as a foreign language. And, she's been there, like, 3 or 4 years now. She turned a shit situation for her into something really positive, and now it's alive.
Yeah.
And she gets so much from teaching, you know, the kids and stuff. I do obviously feel guilty about it. I mean, I'm probably not anymore how long ago it was, but, you know, I'm not massively proud about it, but you got to do what's right for yourself. And, you know, it's a once in a lifetime experience. You don't want to do things by halves. Do you want to get it, like, totally?
Yeah.
So I don't know. What do you think?
What do I think?
Is that a bit mean?
No, I don't. No. I think no one ever really goes, I'm going to go with this person and then split up in a week. I mean, things do change. Your mindset does change. If that was the case, I don't think you would have done it in the first place. No. You know? So it's kind of one of those things where it's like you had the best of intentions. It didn't work out at the time. After that, it actually worked out very well for her. Mm-hmm. It's just the way life goes. And I think you probably made the right decision for both of you, to be honest.
Mm.
I mean, would it have been the right thing to stay together?
No, it's just, well, that's it. You're having these experiences and stuff, and it's just like,
if you'd have stayed together at that point, that would have been the wrong thing. And I think you know that, and she probably knows that now as well. So,
yeah,
you know, you can't just stay with someone for the sake of it. If you know you don't want to be with someone, it's definitely not right to go, I'm just going to stick with you.
And she was her own person as well. She's like, totally could look after her.
To be honest, John, you probably gave her a gift.
Yeah. What? That sounds mean, like, to be not have to deal with me.
Spending time with you, if you didn't want to be with her, would have been wrong.
Yeah, no, you're wasting. Yeah, it's just waste. Yeah.
Yeah, like, although it sounds harsh, you probably did her a favour.
Yeah.
Probably, you know? Sorry.
Yeah. No, and what I was saying before about that end of season thing where you've everything moves fast on a season and then you come to the end and you're like, what do you do?
Yeah, you're right. With season life, everything does move at a much faster pace. It's much more intense. At the end, you've got to make really big decisions about, especially if you live in different places in the UK and whatever. So, yeah. If you asked her now, I bet you any money, Rebecca would be like, nice work.
Yeah.
Well done. You made the right decision.
Yeah. Yeah. So I rode away on a motorbike. Classic. Felt very cliche breakup. That was in Vietnam, in Saigon or whatever, Ho Chi Minh City. And that's where she is now. So we went Vietnam, Indonesia. Awesome. Just like surfing. You can buy a motorbike or rent one and go from south to north. Yeah. Super recommend that.
After Asia, where did that lead you to?
I really wanted to get that done, the finding myself. I'm quite hyperactive, I suppose, and I love having like a sport or something to just commit all my energy to. You know, it could be a sport, a hobby or interest or whatever. Maybe now I've learned to chill out a bit more. I'd enjoy more of the travel more fully. Just at that time, I was just, you know, I was loving the traveling, but I ended up doing a lot of wakeboarding because I was just like, oh, this is awesome. And everyone says traveling's awesome.
Yeah.
But for me, you know, the mountain life and the season life was really, that was me. I got it first try, really, with the first place I went, ticked all my boxes. Like, yeah. It was really, you know, and just like a mountain town, you know, living in a ski resort, really ticked all the boxes. So I was in Asia and I was like, but I'd already done like 2 seasons at that point. And like, there's a season there, first season, second season mindset of like, I'm on holiday, basically, like working holiday. But at some point, if you're going to decide to live in a place full time or a lot of the time, you got to change your mindset, because you can't maintain that season air, like I'm on holiday mindset forever, can you? It's not sustainable. So I was thinking, you know, what do I do? You know, do I want to turn snowboarding into my career? I wasn't a big fan of the idea, because people say, oh, you know, you don't want to turn, you know, your passion into your work because it ruins it, is what some people say.
Oh, really?
Some people say that, like, and especially with snowboard instruction, you can be, you know, helping beginners get up 5 days a week when there's powder days and you can't even...
Yeah, you're just picking kids up off the pitch.
Yeah, yeah. So it's definitely a thing. And so I was like, oh, do I want to do it? But then, like, I had this experience with psychedelic mushrooms, and, you know, all I could talk about, it was snowboarding. And I realized it's just like my passion, like, so deep down, it's my passion. And like, when I was a kid and I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, it was easy. I didn't know what I wanted to do. Like, I just wanted to do tricks, you know,
yeah,
do stunts. But like,
on your BMX.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's just, that was me back then. But I didn't think I knew what I wanted to do with my life, because I didn't think that was a viable thing to do. But after being in Morzine and seeing like the industry that was surrounded by snowboarding and skiing, like, you got Season Airs making brands like Bro and Brethren, even back then Brethren were just starting. I was just like, you know, this whole town is just made for snowboarding and stuff, you know what I mean? It's like a whole industry around it.
Mm-hmm.
There's not many places in the world you can go that are just for BMXing. Like, right, maybe like Austin, Texas or something. But that's like one place. Whereas, you know, with snowboarding and skiing, you can go to whole towns that are just devoted to that lifestyle, you know what I mean? So it opened my eyes to being like, wow, this is my passion. And like, it's totally a way of making money as well. With that, I stopped traveling sooner than I planned. And with the money that I had left, paid for an instructor course, and then just went from there, like.
And what instructor course did you end up doing?
I did the BASI, the British Association of Snow Sports Instructors.
And where did you do that?
So you can do the level one, which is like introductory. You can do that in all the dry slopes in England or Scotland or whatever. The next levels, you start to go into the ski resorts around Europe.
And where did you do it, in the UK?
It was Tamworth.
Tamworth.
Yeah, yeah, Tamworth Snow Dome. So yeah, super accessible, because it's like £500 for the level one, maybe, or £450 or something. But when you think about how much it costs to ski every day in a snow dome, it's actually really good value. Mm-hmm. And like, you could pay a snow dome like £250-300 to ski all week and have no tuition, and it'd be pretty boring. Like, I mean, going up and down, like, without any, but like, you pay the £500 and then you get all that tuition. It's actually fairly good value, like. And you, it's really good if you even don't want to be an instructor, because it's really cheap. If you think about it, if you wanted to pay just an instructor for a week, it's actually pretty good.
That's such a good idea.
Yeah, it's good fun.
Learn to be a snowboard instructor for the same price.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, yeah, and then you can brag to people that you've got a qualification as well. Yeah, after doing those, after going to Asia, I was ready to long-term get into the lifestyle of living in a ski resort and committing my life to snowboarding and being an instructor. And like, I found that more rewarding as well, having like the goals to work towards, instead of just being like on a magical mystery tour of travel, which I, you know, recommend as well. But I appreciated the goals,
yeah,
and having like a longer term trajectory on my life.
So you got your BASI one.
And then I got the number two in Zermatt, Switzerland, which is a beautiful place.
Did you just go to do that, or did you go for a season, or what did you do?
It's close to Morzine. I drove to Zermatt. I wouldn't recommend doing it in Switzerland if you're going to do it, because it's very expensive, but it is a beautiful place. It's a 2-week long course, but the cost of the course is only one thing. Unlike on the first level one, you've got the costs and that's it, except for driving to the dome or whatever. Mm-hmm. But with the level two, you've got the cost of the course, but then you've also got to pay for the lift pass where the course is. And then you've got the cost of staying where the lifts are.
Yep.
And then with Zermatt, you've got to pay to park your car and travel in to the place on the train as well. So It was like £2,000 in the end. So that's one complaint of Bayesy sometimes, to say it's one of the less cost-effective systems, but it is well recognised as a body of governance of whatever snowboarding and skiing.
There are cheaper places to do it though, right? I think they do it here, don't they? On the
It was on the second episode.
Lara.
She did the Cassie.
Yeah.
Yeah, which can be cheaper. Yeah.
I thought they did the Bayesy too here, but I don't know.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. I was going to do a course at the end of the season in Hinstocks, but no one booked onto it with all the COVID and stuff. And that was going to be a lot more cost effective for me because I've already got a lift pass for this valley and I'm already staying here. So then that really would be the cost of the course and that's it again. So it's just my advice is, when you're booking those courses, to consider the other costs of just even getting there and stuff as well, I suppose.
Yeah.
Figure out the one that's got the best logistics to make it more affordable. Like,
that's really good advice.
So then with that level two, I could teach in Europe on real mountain environments. Level one is like indoor, and level two, you learn about outdoor actual mountains.
Ah, okay.
For that, you're equipped to teach in a lot of Europe, not France. You know, they're the highest of high with the standards. So then I was teaching in Switzerland a little bit, which was, really nice. And worked for this tour. It's like a school trip company that would do trips for international schools.
Mm-hmm.
That was really good. It was really like multicultural. They get lots of different people working there just to give the kids an experience of different cultures. And kids that would come would be from the Middle East and stuff, all from international schools. So they all spoke English, but they could be from like Singapore or Riyadh in the Middle East and stuff. So they were super interesting as well.
So you enjoyed that job?
Yeah. I mean, I said I'd do skiing instruction as well and do a whole season, but I did 1 week of skiing instructing. I wasn't too keen on it.
Did you have any ski
experience?
Yeah. Like as in ski instructor experience?
Yeah. From a level three, then you have to do a second discipline. So I took skiing as a second discipline. And then also it's good for employment as a snowboard instructor if you've got ski teaching experience, because Europe is so ski dominant and skiers tend to take lessons more than snowboarders do as well.
So you're a bit more adaptable if you've got both.
Yeah, so that's always a good thing. But I didn't enjoy the skiing instructing.
So then did you do another summer in Morzine or did you go elsewhere?
It was a big desire of mine to chase the winters year round. I'd have met people in Morzine that had done New Zealand seasons. I was like, awesome, you can finish the winter and do another winter, which is, more snowboarding, even more. I thought that 1 week a year was not enough and then the season's good enough. But then I was like, what? You can do a season and then another season, you know, even more time. So I was like, let's do that. But I was always too late to apply for New Zealand. Like, you've got to apply in February to be then ready for our summer, their winter.
Right.
So that's like mid of the winter season you're already in. So it's like I'm always just doing what I do.
Yeah.
And I forget to apply in time. But then with Australia, you can apply later. You can pay money to go to like a skills assessment day where you don't have a guarantee of a job, but then they look at you and so it's like an interview. You pay for an interview, which is pretty mad, but I was down because I wasn't in time for the New Zealand one. To get into New Zealand can be harder because it's just like world renowned as one of the best places to ski in the Southern Hemisphere. Right. So to ski
a bit more
in the summer, like
competition to get those visas.
Well, the visas is easy, but just working holiday visa for someone under 30 or whatever. But the actual job itself, because you've got all this snow sports people from all over the world who want to work there at that time of the year. So it is hard to get into, like, whereas Australia, also hard, but they did this skills assessment thing and I paid the money and just flew however many thousand miles to see if I could get the job, like.
So you paid the money and left on the flight to Australia without having a job?
Yeah, no. I had a backup plan of being a ski tech there. I could have just done that, but I was, obviously really keen to do my instructing and be part of a ski school. But I did have that backup plan. And in a ski town, there's obviously those different jobs going.
Yeah.
I mean, most people don't think of snow when they think of Australia.
No. But
apparently there's more snow in Australia than in Switzerland.
Oh, right.
But yeah, it's not deep. I don't know. It's just like spread. Obviously, Australia's huge, isn't it? So
yeah,
the area that is snowy is massive. So yeah, I got on that interview, flew there and yeah, to see how we went with it. Like.
And how'd you get on?
Yeah, I was late.
You were late?
Yeah.
What do you mean you were late? You flew all that way, paid that money and you were late?
Yeah, that was, yeah. I didn't realise yet. It was just a different place. It was a real eye-opener. Because like you live in the town and then you have to drive up to a...
Where were you, first of all?
Jindabyne is the ski town, one of the biggest ski towns in...
That's where Lauren was for her summer.
Yeah. And then, but yeah, so the ski town's like... got no ski resorts anywhere near, and then you drive like 45 minutes into a national park to then get to the ski resort, and like sometimes you have to like queue up at the entry to the national park, and you have to like, and it just takes time. And then I got pulled over for driving, like, for speeding.
Oh my goodness.
A nightmare. I was obviously really stressed out, so paid my fine and got there, and this lovely guy, Jacob, who I've since worked with in China, and it's the nicest thing anyone's ever done for me. I was late, and he could see I was flustered, and like the group had already like met, talked, and then started to get the lift up, and he was just like, come on with me. He's like, they've not done the register yet. And I was just like, oh, what an absolute legend that like he could see.
And he was on the course with you.
Yeah, he was on the
not course, sorry,
the interview type thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously he's worrying about himself as well, but for him to just like, you know, think of me at that moment like a stranger. So I was always really grateful of that. And
that's so nice.
Yeah, managed to get there in time, and super stressful. It should have been only one day of assessment, but it got stretched out to like a whole week because they brought too many people, and they were like, oh, we don't know, we might need you, we might not. So they just played us for like a whole week, which was super stressful. But in the end, we all got employed, and yeah, worked a whole season, a super long season in Australia. The snow is really good. It's not guaranteed there very much at all as opposed to Europe. So it was really good that I got like a super long season, got to do loads of, you know, got lots of experience, lots of hours riding an awesome place. Best snow they'd had in 20 years.
Wow.
I think I got more powder days in Australia than I did the season before in France, because, you know, it was such a bad season there, which was just surreal. Like, I remember riding powder the one day, and you're in the gum trees, like the like bamboo, whatever, like, and there was riding through the trees powder style, and this parrot flies over. I'm just like, this is crazy. Like,
wow.
So I'll never forget it, man. It's so cool.
So did you enjoy that season?
Yeah, that was amazing.
What's your favourite thing about Australia and working there?
I've got such a... It's a shame. I've got such a skewed view of Australia.
Oh, really?
Because I really did just do the winter, and then like try to do some like farm work so I could get that second year visa that they do. So you get 1 year visa, just pay the money and you get it. As if someone from UK, I don't know if that applies to a lot of different countries as well, I suppose, but you get 1 year visa, you pay like $200 or whatever. You've got to have like a certain amount of money in your bank account, like 2,000, 3,000 to show that you're not just going to turn up and then be on the streets. And then that's a working holiday visa, you can get a job. But if you want to get a second year, you've got to work in a farm job or in a rural area for 3 months, which is a long time. Like,
yeah.
It's a good idea because they struggle for labour in those places. So the young people that come and travel for 3 months, they have to go and do this farm work, or it's not always farm work, but in a rural area where there's not many people to do the jobs.
Right.
And then you get that second year. So I did the snowboarding instructing, and then I tried to do a little bit of the farm work so I could come back next year, but I didn't do much. And then I was had to get back for the next winter season. I mean, I didn't have to, but that was what I wanted to do for the snowboarding aspect. So I saw other parts, but only like fleeting parts of Australia. So
right.
I think I'd like to go back again, but I don't know how visas are going to work with me already spending that first one. If I got more qualified, I could get sponsored possibly, but I'd like to go to New Zealand as well. you get 2 years straight off as a UK British citizen there.
Mm-hmm.
I had a job there last summer, but with the COVID and all that, it never
in
happened.
New Zealand?
Yeah, yes. Still right. Got that on the pipeline that I'd like to do.
Ah, cool. With your job in Australia, did you get accommodation included with that, or what was the situation with that?
That's a good question, because in different parts of the world, ski areas operate differently, don't they? Like in like France, the ski lift could be owned by like the farmers, or it could be owned by a ski lift company. Then all the restaurants are owned by the restaurants themselves, are private businesses. But like in New Zealand and Australia, it's all one big company. So if you work for Thredbo, you can work for Thredbo as a ski fitter. You can work for Thredbo as a cleaner, as an instructor. It's all under one thing. So it makes it easier to apply, at least, because you just go on the website and you can apply from, you know, you can be a piece basher doing the, you know, snow machines, all under one roof. And then they can provide you with accommodation for all those people as well. If you're like new, at least in Jindabyne and in Thredbo, if you were new on that first season or the second season, then they'd help you find a place with other employees from the same place. But then normally after that, they'd encourage you to just sort it out. And it's easy enough English speaking, and I never had to do it outside of the company. But once you're in the town, it's quite easy to do. Like, then I did another Morzine. So
you love Morzine?
Yeah. So back there again, yeah. It's, well, if you don't know where I was, then I'm probably in Morzine. Yeah. yeah, I was spending a summer in England. I never really fully settled in Morzine like I'm trying to do here in Austria. I was still kind of like, you know, doing seasonal rentals and stuff. And I wasn't sure if that's what I wanted. Like, I was really settled there, but obviously itchy feet.
Mm-hmm.
We're on the Season Air podcast, so I like going places, trying new things. So I wasn't quite ready to just call it a day and just be settled there. So I was back in England. I'm always really grateful to be able to, like, my brother's got his own business and my parents have got their own business. So
what's your brother do?
He's a Land Rover mechanic, like he's a Land Rover engineer.
Cool.
So shout out Marion 4x4. And I'm super grateful, and it's a really nice position to be able to come home and pick up work off my brother or my parents. That's the best thing you could hope for, isn't it? It's not easy to just pick up jobs. So I was back in England and applying for jobs on the Bayesian website, and I was applying for all different types, and I saw this one in China about coaching like a freestyle team. Didn't explain much on the advertisement, but I applied for it anyway. I was like, I obviously won't get it, but might as well. And then I got
Why
a call.
Why didn't you think you'd get it?
Well, it's like full-blown working for a national snowboard team, coaching their snowboarding. It's my experience until that point was good experience, and I'm super into like freestyle. But, you know, you would think you'd want to get someone more qualified, but I suppose it's hard to find people that want to live in China. The people I was coaching were beginners from the start, and then they wanted to go from beginners right through to Olympics. So yeah.
Wait.
Yeah, so it's pretty crazy.
So you're on the Bayesian website.
Mm-hmm.
The advertisement is for, we need a snowboard coach for our national Chinese snowboard team.
Yeah, basically.
But they're ultimate beginners.
Yeah.
And we want you to get them to Olympic level.
Yeah. I was like, sound. Yeah, I'm doing that.
That's so random.
Yeah, well, that's it. I ended up ringing up Bayesian and being like, what is this advert? Like, do you know much about it? And they were like, we don't actually know that much about it, to be honest. You tell us, like, what you find out. We just advertised it. And, they rang me up when I was at work at my brother's, and I had to sit down. Like, I was, they're like, oh, yeah, you can travel all over the world and all this. And I was like, you know, I don't think I'm qualified enough. They're like, oh no, you're one of the more qualified people we've found. And I was like, all right, sweet. And they were like, so we need you to come out, like, you know, as soon as possible. Yeah. So I was like, okay, like next week I'll do it. Like, so, you know, I got everything sorted and like flew out within a week or two, which was, yeah, pretty mental. And
don't they have anyone in China to coach their national team?
Not really.
Like people who've been Olympians perhaps?
I mean, I suppose they do, but like China is new to snow sports. Like, China always does really well in summer Olympics. They're super dominant, but the Winter Olympics, not so much. And they hosted the summer one a while back in Beijing. And then they're going to host the winter one now as well in 2022.
Cool.
So they're the first city to host summer and winter in the same place. So they're a country that went from having like 20 ski resorts in the whole country to having like, you know, 50,000 ski resorts. And that was in the space of a couple of years because the president, you know, Xi Jinping, he was like, right, we're having the Winter Olympics now. So get building ski resorts. And they're like, okay. And then, you know, within a year and a half, there's been 25,000 ski resorts thrown up.
That's mental.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the setting. So, that you know, it's so new to them.
Yeah.
Skiing, snowboarding, it's totally new.
John Marion, he's the man.
Yeah, I'm the man, mate. yeah, so...
we've got a team, completely new beginners, and we need that man, John Marion.
Yeah, well, why are you so surprised? You've only just met me today?
I just think it's... amazing.
Yeah,
it's a pretty cool thing to be a part of, I guess.
Oh yeah, it was amazing. And yeah they definitely do really have cool. Some snowboarders from previous times and skiers, coaches, but not a lot.
Yeah,
and like the scale of China is obviously ginormous. There's more Chinese people than there is any other people.
Yeah,
it's the biggest country in the world, like, and we don't even ever think about it, do we, a lot of the time? No. More so now, but back then it's not on anyone's radar, is it? But it is the biggest country in the world, and until 10 years ago they didn't have skiing and snowboarding. And then it's just like ping, now we do this.
That's amazing.
So they don't have a big base of experience. It is a thing that they do in China often, is to bring Western talent out, or whatever, Western experience, to help advise on what they're doing. Like,
what an opportunity.
Yeah, I'd recommend it. Again, I suppose I'm just following snowboarding. At some point when I was in Thailand or whatever, I decided, right, this is it now. I'm just going to put all my energy into snowboarding as a career and just see where it takes you. Like, you just don't know what's going to happen. If you put absolutely everything into something, you know, the possibilities are endless, aren't they? Like, you just got to do it, haven't you? You got to go for it. The first few weeks were the most stressful weeks of my life.
Yeah.
I got off the plane, jet lagged. They sat me down in this massive boardroom, like massive table with all the chairs. And they're like, so, John, what's the plan? I'm like, what do you mean, the plan? And they're like, well, you're the boss. Like, what's the plan? And I'm like, well, I don't know what the setup is. Like, explain to me. And they're like, well, we've got no snow, no snowboards, no hill, and you need to teach them how to snowboard.
What?
I was like, okay.
What were you told before you got there? Like, yeah.
Not much, man. Like, they were just saying, you're based in Nanjing, the city, and... we're going to get people from different sports, and you've got to select them and then train them up. It was very vague. They were saying there's going to be facilities there for the snowboard, like airbags and dry slopes and stuff. But they only got built in the last 2 months that I was there. So that they were supposed to be there before I arrived. But so, you know, it's obviously doesn't pan out how they say it is, but you just have to roll with it.
Right. So you got there, no snow, no snowboards.
No slope. So I was just teaching them, like, you know, air guitar, air snowboard. You know, we were just doing the movements.
Air snowboarding.
Yeah, just like practicing the movements. And I was doing physical training with them, you know, strength and conditioning, but I knew nothing. I know a lot more about it now, but back then I didn't, you know. I was making them do like 10 pistol squats on either side, which is incredibly hard. Like, but they all did it. The kids are like ninjas, you know.
So you're really thrown in the deep end.
Yeah. No, the main thing I was like, I had an interpreter that spoke everything for me.
Okay.
So the first day I had these 30 kids. They're like, right, tomorrow, John, you got to do it. I'm like, oh God. So yeah, I turn up on the second day. They're all lined up military style and I'm freaking out, but I've got this interpreter so I can talk. And then she says what I said. So I've got like 20 seconds to think of the next thing I'm saying, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that was the saving grace, just having that
little breather.
Yeah, the buffer in time, just to think what the hell I'm going to do. Plus, she might have made it sound better than what I was saying at the start. Like, so.
Do you speak Chinese now?
Yeah, I had different experiences with different interpreters, and in the end, I was just like, it's just better to just do it myself.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it'd be like, don't do that, you're going to fall off a cliff, and then the translator's just on a phone or whatever, and it's like, no, you need to say that quick or else someone's going to get injured, like, you know what I mean? So I just had to learn to shout it myself, because with coaching, you need to, you want to give that instant feedback. You don't want to like go through and it just lose the moments past, you know, a lot of the time.
Yeah, so, it's important.
So yeah, we had 30 kids and then they were like, right, next week, John, 600 kids turn up.
600
kids. So, and then slowly more and more Western staff started coming out and other Chinese coaches. So we had to like build a structure and all that. But I did really enjoy the time when it was just me. Mm-hmm. And like that really helped me with the language. And it was so immersive just being me, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I was very happy when the other guys turned up. But like I was also super happy that I was there first and I got to experience it just all on my own as well. Like it was, yeah, really cool.
I mean, that is...
Yeah, I hope to go back and I hope to have more experience. I hope to have another opportunity. It's sad that I left, and like I was just speaking to some of the kids today, actually. They rang me up when I was doing my washing, and I miss it, man, like a lot. Like the people, the friendships and all that, and it's just a crazy place to live for such a long... I was there for a year and a half. It is intense to live somewhere like that for so long.
Yeah,
I think... Like with living there for a year and a half and then coming back and it being a lockdown, like I left just before COVID and got back and then COVID hit and I was injured. And so for a year and a half, I was in China. Then I was locked down for a long time before coming here, and just coming back into social life, it's a bit weird. You know what I mean? Because just living like that for so long, as good as it was, you know, I needed to come back as well.
What was the highlight of that experience? If you had to pick one.
Just the kids, man. Like, and I'll get emotional talking about it again now, because just like, you know, it's compared to being an instructor, you've got clients coming in every week or every day, and then you say bye. Whereas as a coach, you're staying with them for their entire development throughout life and throughout their sport.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, and it was... You know, they got a bad deal, these kids, like, but that's just how it is in China, you know. It's hard life, you know, they work hard and it's all for one for all or whatever. It's the sacrifices they have to make, you know. They never see the family, they never got any education. It was just snowboarding, which is just wrong, because like if they don't end up snowboarding because of injury or because they aren't good enough, then they can't get into anything else.
So are they like selected for this then?
Or? Yeah, they were, a lot of them were like martial artists or boxers, divers, trampolinists and stuff. So they've been in the athletic system of China since, well, not birth, but since very young, you know what I mean? Like, so they're all amazing athletes, but like, you know, a lot of them couldn't even read the, you know, Chinese and whatever, because they were just always training sports and stuff.
Wow.
You know, some of them didn't see the families for like 3 years at a time. And so as a coach, we were like the parents.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't have to look after, we had like staff that looked after like the home things as well, but we were always like with them. And like, you know, it's just all the 600 kids, I was like a part of their life.
Yeah.
And like.
You're like a role model for it.
And it's sad, you know, I suppose I'm used to having like all those kids constantly giving me positive affirmations, like, now I don't have, you know, I suppose I just the love, you know what I mean? One of the reasons why I left China was because I wanted to do more snowboarding for myself, which I have done, which has been great. And I've fulfilled a lot of my goals in that, but there's nothing better than the satisfaction you get than helping other people, isn't it? Like, it's
for sure,
it's, I don't know, it's just getting older, I suppose. You realize, you know, chasing your own personal short-term pleasures and whatever, but there's like the long-term satisfaction of just contributing to the world, isn't it?
Yeah.
So.
Sounds absolutely amazing. Sounds like you did an awesome job as well. And I bet those kids are really grateful to have had you around. So.
Yeah.
Like you said, you had a chat with them today when you were doing your washing.
Yeah. They always ask me if I've got a girlfriend or, yeah, so they're funny.
What sort of level did you end up getting them to?
Well, if you go on my Instagram, it's all on there. There's loads of funny videos on there, but they were doing like double corks by the time.
Wow.
Yeah. So like that was like a year and a half and they were already doing like double corks, and they're still riding now, and you know, getting more consistent. Obviously, they aren't bothered about injuring themselves, like, or they probably are, but they just push through it.
Yeah. What sort of age were they?
Anything from like 6 to like 18, 19.
Okay.
It was just hard, you know, lots of different reasons why I'd want to stay and I miss it, but also why I needed to leave. And like, you know, I wanted to say like, yeah, they got mistreated by like other coaches there, and it's just hard to be part of that. But when you're there, you're the one showing them that as a coach, you know, the older men in their life can actually show them love and not have to be like aggressive or abusive. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they can get a positive experience from you.
Yeah, yeah. So you're there, and you're surrounded by stuff that you don't agree with, but you can't change it because it's China. You're not going to change just like the whole environment. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they're not getting to be kids. It's just how they do it. Like, and it's getting better. At the same time, they've had really great opportunity because they get to, a lot of kids in China aren't going to be able to go snowboarding, and these guys do.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I learned a lot about China, and it's interesting, and I was trying to figure out what, you know, these kids' futures are and stuff, and what's best for them, and I don't know. It was just nice. It's hard to get along with what you were being a part of, but at least you were showing them that it didn't have to be like that.
A better way, yeah.
Yeah, a better way. So that's one way you'd like make yourself feel better about it. But yeah. I'm too into like ethics and stuff to just brush it all away, you know what I mean? Or whatever, I don't know. So, yeah.
So a good experience, but a tough one at the same time.
Yeah, just it's the world, isn't it? Like China, get to experience that. It's just the way they do it. I can't change it. Or I could try, I suppose, with different things maybe in the future. I don't know. But that's how they do it. And the country, the conditions are getting better for everyone. All those people are going to be able to get into snowboarding and live season air lifestyles like we do.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. Like, so you could look at it from all kinds of lenses, perspectives, but it's totally positive that China's onto snowboarding and skiing there. And they love snowboarding way more than skiing.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be a great market for snowboarding and skiing. Great career opportunities for anyone. I'd recommend it. Saying all that stuff, you know, I'd still massively recommend going there because it's just, yeah, once in a lifetime. I love Asia. It's like being on a different planet. and if anyone out there is looking at a China job, you know, it's going to be full on.
Yeah.
But just be open-minded. Easy going, don't you, really? Like, it's things are different in different places and you can't be too judgmental or whatever. You just got to get on with it. When I had the lady on the phone telling me about the job, she's like, come with an open mind. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I can do it. You know what I mean? Because it is, you know.
Different world.
Yeah, yeah. So you just got an open mind. You get to experience it. That's the best life.
Yeah.
You can travel and some places are similar. Some places are totally different. And there you get so much from that as well, don't you? Because you're just learning.
Yeah, for sure. If you're looking from an outsider point of view of where you've obviously, the journey that you've done from Camp America to China must be like looking at two different people for you.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. And I put that down to the snowboard training and all that, like, and just growing up. But like the training I did, you have to do the teaching qualification along with the technical, and it's like public speaking and all that. And I was, you know, coming from having that anxiety. Yeah, no, yeah, it's just, I stuck with my passion. It's saw me to a great life, and all my 20s have just been nothing but adventures, and it's been amazing. Like, so I'm glad that happened with the Camp America as well, because it just meant I got onto who I really was sooner, and then you can just follow that, and you'll go good places, won't you, if you're following your heart. Like,
why did you leave China in the end?
I did want to, like, pursue my own snowboarding as well. That was a big part of it, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could dress it up and say all these things about ethics and things, but a big part of it is just that I was like, well, I'm teaching all these guys and they got to a level that was higher than me. It's like, well, I want to do this stuff now. Like, you know, I'm still an all right age to do it. And like all this travel and stuff is do it while you're young. You know, I mean, people do it when they're old and fair play, but a lot of the stuff I want to do is, you know, pretty strenuous on the body. So I want to do it whilst I'm able. So that was a big part of it as well. Looking at the coaches that I work with, it was amazing to work with crazy professionals in the snowboard industry, mm-hmm. which was amazing. Like, obviously worked with a lot of people I thought weren't professional, but for everyone that was like that, I got to work with people that were top of the game, you know what I mean?
Wow.
That was awesome. Yeah, because meeting those coaches, they weren't so qualified up to the teeth with instructor qualifications, and they weren't so bothered about those qualifications. They were more just interested in you as a snowboarder in the snowboard community and your abilities. That kind of synced up with me. I want to selfishly just go and do my snowboarding, but also that kind of helps me in the coaching career realm of like, it applies as well. So it kind of gives me that, you know, I don't feel so useless as I'm just going and bumming and snowboarding. I've actually got, there's a greater, you know, reason for it, contributing to my career and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I left and I got injured. I had to have knee surgery.
Oh no.
So that was another learning experience.
Was that in China?
I injured myself in China and I didn't realise I was injured. Came home, came to Dubai last year, realised I was injured, had surgery, and then came back out to Meyerhofen in March, did 2 days, and then it closed because of COVID.
Yeah.
So I did try and do my season last year as well, but then got shut down. But that was another good thing, really, because I wasn't fully recovered from my surgery. Looking back, I didn't understand what it was going to take after having something like surgery, which is way more intense than I thought it was going to be. So COVID for me, I was like saying, I'm already having a setback with my knee injury and everyone else is with COVID. So selfishly, I was like, at least I'm not the only one stuck.
Yeah, so, at least it's why you've already got an injury. You had to do it anyway.
Yeah, so I left China, got injured, had to learn about rehab, recovery, and I was learning a lot more about physical, like strength and conditioning in China, because there's lots of really good strength and conditioning coaches there, you know, like high qualified dudes. And I was really trying to learn a lot there because I always meet snowboarders that are like experts in the body. And I'm like, how do you do that? How do you learn all that? And it's like, well, I broke this and I broke that. And out of necessity, they've become experts in physical health. And I wanted to learn it before I had to learn it. And I was getting there, but I was just doing too much. I was working, snowboarding. I was trying to do as much snowboarding as I could before I left on this airbag facility that they had that should have been built when I arrived, but only got built in the last 2 months. So I was like, I'm still ready to leave, but I'm just going to smash out these airbags, do loads of tricks, go to Austria. It's going to be amazing. I'm going to do all the tricks. but I just did too much, you know, fatigued my body too much and got a knee injury. So learned about health recovery.
Was that your COVID experience?
My COVID experience. So I finished up in China, then COVID hit, which I was glad about being out of China initially, because that's where it all started, isn't it? But slowly China started getting back to normal. You know, Europe and the Western world started having the full force of it. And throughout the whole time, my friends back in China would just continue working. So I was like, oh. Some of the guys there were like, this is too sketchy. I want to go home. But then they ended up regretting it, really, because it got sketchy even more so in America. Like, you know, American guys I was working with, and then America gets it just as bad or worse. And you could have just stayed in China and continued to earn money, but hindsight, yeah. So I left just before COVID. I went to Austria, went snowboarding with the team in Dubai, which was really nice, and ended up working for them in Dubai.
Oh, cool.
Because that was one of the reasons why I left, because they'd always say they'd send me somewhere cool, but never did. In China, like, they'd be like, oh, you know, keep working hard, John, and we'll send you to Australia and you can do the training there.
Oh, right. So it was the same company.
Yeah. Because I quit, but I was like, the top team were training in Dubai and they were like, yeah, John, you can come with them this time. I had like the second team and I'd always be feeding people up to the top team.
Oh, right.
And the top team were always like, let's bring John along now. And they were like, yeah, it's cool. And I'd be working really hard to try and make that a thing. And then they'd just be like, oh, no, you can't go now. So I was just like, and it happened like multiple times.
So like the Chinese team came to Dubai?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it was cool to roll around. I saw Teresa and at that point I had two of the athletes and I had no translator. I literally had them for the week. And it was just me and them. And then I was like, oh, Teresa. And then I was like, oh, nigga, giving it the Chinese chat. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Did you know Teresa before then?
Yeah, I came to...
We're talking about Teresa Cullen, who was on 2 episodes ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I came to Austria for a coaching course, and then I went to spring break, and that was like after a Morzine season. I drove from there to here, right. And that's when I saw how epic Austria was, you know, how cheap the beer was and how amazing all the snow parks were and stuff. So I met her then.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so then I realised I was injured in Stubai, went home, got operated on, did some rehab, ambitiously came out here again, got shut down because of COVID.
What was the idea in coming out again? To stay or?
To stay, yeah. I'd bought the season pass in Stubai. So I was like, no, I won't refund it because this guy says if I have this operation, then I should be good in 2 months or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I came back out, but then, yeah, COVID hit for the second time, I suppose, because things opened up. So then I went back home and then I was like, right, I just got to get as fit as I can. And it was a great setting for it, I suppose, because there's no bars, don't have amazing social life back in England from not being there for such a long time. So I was just learning loads about nutrition and exercise and just like a freak all the time, just doing exercises to strengthen up my legs, you know, like hamstrings and all that, like muscles that didn't really get used before, get those going big time to protect my knees so then I can go and snowboard again, which is all I ever trying to do, like, so.
Yeah, fair play. And then you're back again.
Mate, yeah, finally made it out here and I was nervous about my injury and stuff, but slowly got into the season and got confidence in my body again, which was epic. It was like December, so it was cutting it fine. I came out here to beat Brexit and I would have liked to have got here sooner, but I was still doing physio and I was still thinking, well, my knee doesn't feel like how it used to before, but it's never really going to feel like that. You know, I'm 28 and they've removed some of the meniscus from the outside of it, which is a bit more of an awkward side. So I was trying to recover. It kept going, but I was just like, oh, well, it's time to go to the mountains now and I need to go before. So it was last minute. I was like, oh, and I wasn't even sure about coming out really. I was still like really, you know, in two minds. And at that point I was almost getting a bit horny for a mortgage. Like,
really?
Yeah, like I almost like put it all to bed, man, all the lifestyle.
Whoa.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was really nice to be at home, be with my family, my brother. Yeah, I've not spent that much. That was the longest I spent at home for a long time. Summer was amazing. I got into like canoeing. It was just really nice. I was injured and it should have been really bad, but I was just, I don't know, I must have been trying to make the best of everything. Or plus I'm always like 100% full speed snowboard action.
Yeah.
But then I had time to just slow down.
Yeah.
So it's COVID as well, isn't it? I suppose. And then, yeah, being at home and just the world, the COVID and all that, it's like unpredictable. Like I quit the job in China thinking, oh, I'll get another one. I'll get another amazing coaching job.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm like, will I? Because the world's a bit mad. But hopefully it will get back to that. Like, but that's why I was kind of that mindset. Like, oh, you know, get a house.
Yeah, makes you think, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm starting to think more like that. I mean, yeah, I used to do the viewings at the estate agents and I used to just show people around and just whatever, not think about it. But then I was like showing people around. I was like, oh, so this house is how much money and these people, what these people do? And, you know, I was starting to think, you know, so coming around to that. But then I'm glad I didn't. Now I'm out here and like I had its challenges this season with COVID and Brexit and stuff. I still don't feel ready to settle, but I am doing all the things that are required to settle. But that's just because of Brexit and I need to get all these things, paperwork sorted to set up a life here.
Yeah.
Looking to the future, I'd like to set my life up here in such a way that I can then continue to travel to places like China again. I'd really like to obviously go back there. I didn't even see I saw the Great Wall of China from the plane, but I didn't see it from the wall. So I need to go back. And I promised I'd go back. So I don't want to go there for work or just for the fun of it. And work in like New Zealand and just anywhere that snowboarding takes me again.
Yeah.
So if I can set up that life here in such a way, that's the goal.
It would probably be nice to kind of go back to China and see how the industry is sort of flourishing out there.
Yeah, no. I want to, you know, I've got the language enough to do the coaching, whatever, and teaching. And it's a good money, you know. It's a good industry, and it's great food.
I'm so impressed that you got the language. That's awesome. Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah, I'm trying to do the German now. I'm trying to kind of copy my technique of in China, but obviously having the interpreter and having the kids every day to speak to, I think is the best environment. You know what I mean? Having kids to talk to, and also just having like a private teacher with you, basically.
Can you name a time when you felt most out of your comfort zone?
Well, you're definitely that China story. Yeah, that was jet lag day one, having it all piled on. I was just trying to ask, is my toilet one of those sit down ones or is it one of those squat ones? And they're trying to hit me with all the other stuff. So yeah, that was totally the most out of my comfort zone I've ever been. I feel like I've struggled to find anywhere that will put me in such a out of comfort zone. I hope that something will come to put me in even the same or even more out of my comfort zone. Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely, yeah, pure stress and anxiety for like multiple days. Just going back to your room and just being like, yeah, but it was super rewarding. So yeah, I hope it happens again.
What's kind of like the biggest lesson that you've learned from doing all these different things over the years?
Well, we've mentioned before, like just being open-minded and just being able to go with the flow. Lara was saying as well, wasn't she? The plan, you have plans and they're good. It feels good to work towards long-term goals, but you've also got to be in the moment and enjoy the moment. The plan could be totally different and diverged onto something else, but you just got to go with the flow, yeah?
For anyone listening, Lara Parsons, episode 2, go and check it out. But you're right, she talks a lot about leaving a little wiggle room in your plans because you don't know what's going to come up, especially in this lifestyle where you're going from one thing to another. So yeah. What is the number one best thing about doing season work?
We've already mentioned a lot of really good things about it. I don't know if it's the best thing, but like it could be like the opportunities that you get in other countries could be far better than the ones you'd get where you currently are, no matter what country you're in as your home country. You can just go somewhere totally foreign, which might be uncomfortable and you're away from your friends and family, but the opportunity is there. You're just going to be able to step six steps up the ladder. I first saw it in Morzine, and you got like 22-year-olds managing a whole hotel. You don't get that in England. Just like, oh yeah, this is like my second job and I'm now the manager of this whole hotel and there's another hotel, you know. So you just get, it's like fast track. Depending on which country and what industry, it might be different, but you can definitely fast track yourself on a career path if you're willing to go with the flow and go somewhere different.
If you hadn't have embarked on this journey, are there any opportunities that stand out to you that you definitely wouldn't have had?
Just meeting different people from different places. I'd never even met a Scottish person before, and it just blew my mind. Like, it's so close to home, but it took me to go all the way to France to get to know Scottish people. Yeah.
It's funny when you think back on it now, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I lived in France for 5 years, and it took me going to Australia to then live with the French person. And I got way closer with the French people in Australia than I did when I was in France.
So
you just the situations you get in, I suppose, the people you live with. And
yeah, for sure. If you hadn't have done season work, if you hadn't have gone and moved abroad and worked abroad, what would you be doing now, do you think?
I'd probably have got fired by my parents from the the estate agents. And I don't know, I'd probably have found some sort of job, but I'd just be waiting for the time that I could probably go like mountain biking or something. Like, UK is a beautiful place. I learned that this summer, like, you know, it is beautiful. So out there mountain biking or canoeing or something, and just, I don't know, doing a job that would be somewhat aligned with what I believe in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So at this point in time, where is home to you? Where feels the most like home?
Well, it's the people that make it feel like home, isn't it? I suppose. Yeah. So I've got my home. And Morzine was my first second home because of the relationships I've made there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd say China, like, it would be like a second home to me as well, just because the people, again, like, I continue to like stay in touch with people from there, stay in touch with people from Morzine, stay in touch with people from home in UK. The people make the home. And yeah, even China, like, I want to go back and continue to spend time with those people. Like, So, and then hope to make this another second home. I don't know how many second homes you can have.
Can have as many as you want.
Yeah, have to ask some of the politicians of bloody the UK, isn't it?
Very true, yeah. Do you have any quotes that you live by?
I mean, there's this guy, Eckhart Tolle. And do you know the dude?
Power of Now.
Power of Now, yeah. Do you know any of his quotes?
No. I probably do.
Something that guy says.
Well, actually, my next question is, do you have any books or publications that you would advise our listeners to check out?
The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, like, he's like my messiah. He's like recognized as one of he's like the number one spiritual leader of our time, above the Dalai Lama or whatever, even. And his book is all about being in the present moment and just, yeah, getting the most out of life through being in the present moment. I wish I could think of a quote, but I can't. But it's all in there. It's all good. And it goes hand in hand with the sport of like snowboarding or any kind of like anything that you do for fun, isn't it? You get in a flow state in the present moment. So I'd definitely recommend Power and Air by Eckhart Tolle. And it's not pseudoscience or anything. It's legit.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What is the best piece of advice you've ever had, or what is something you wish someone had told you or told your younger self?
I think recently I've had good advice. In China, like, you've got these, all the snowboard coaches are all a bit more chill. And then you've got all the strength and conditioning coaches that have been to university, got master's degrees and stuff. They're still into sports, but they're like much more professional. And they talk a lot about mentors. And Lauren was saying as well, which film? I want to watch that film. I haven't watched it. She recommended about, and it talked about mentors. Those strength and conditioning coaches talked a lot about finding someone to be your mentor. And yeah, I've never really thought about it before, but it is a good, you know, in your chosen life path, finding someone that's got experience and that can share it with you. You can do that now with like Instagram and, you know, social media. You can reach out to people and genuinely get like guidance, and it's a good move. It's funny. I don't know. I try and find people and I like try and call them my mentor, and they just like make them uncomfortable. But
it's because they then feel responsible, don't they?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, no, but I think it was something I didn't consider before. I think it's a pretty valuable thing to have. Like,
this is my mum's favorite question.
Okay.
When she listens to my podcast, I have to ask you, when you travel, what's the one thing you take everywhere with you?
I've got a Bose speaker that I've had, and it's the only thing that's came, all the things we've talked about, that's the only thing that's came on all the journeys, which is pretty crazy really, and it still works. So since my first season to now, it's came everywhere. And so that's pretty cool, really.
That is cool.
Shout out to both. They should send me a new one.
They should send us both a new one. So another question that I ask everyone who comes on the show is there anyone you want to call out to come on the show and have a chat with me?
Call out. I like that. I do a gypsy style call out. Like, yeah. So, well, I know that Aisling has expressed interest in going on the podcast. So I think it's time for her to get involved. I think she'll have lots of, I'd love to hear what she's got to say about the business and bringing all that, she's got her own business and bringing it all together. And just, I'm jealous of anyone that can do a season with their siblings. That's really nice as well. I'd like to hear about that. Yeah.
Okay, so Aisling Kite of Brethren Apparel.
Mm-hmm.
Who else?
Yeah, Cy Keys. Shout out to him. He never ending in his quest for helping people in situations that he's probably been in the past, just helping people navigate a new life in a new country. Like, yeah, he helped me come out here and advise me. So I think it's just in his nature to just impart helpful knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Ella Jackson, I did my first season with her. And ever since meeting her then, she's just continued to travel all over the place just like everywhere. I think she's really been trying to just live the lifestyle to the absolute fullest and just go to as many places as possible. So I'm sure she's got endless knowledge to share.
Perfect. Where can people find you if they want to contact you for coaching or snowboard instructing or any of those things?
I'm just on Instagram. It's John Marion Instructor. So John_Marion, MARRION _ instructor. And any questions about anything as well. I forgot to mention last time, you know, always want to chat to, you know, new people and hopefully have new exciting stuff on there, like about snowboarding and life.
Yeah. It's nice to finally meet you after literally all of my mates have been like, you need to speak to John Marion. He's been to China. So, thank you for coming on and hopefully you'll have some more stories and then come back on again another time.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on. It's been really fun. Yeah, anytime.
My pleasure. Cheers, John. Man, talk about getting thrown in the deep end. What an amazing story. Thanks again to John for joining me on the podcast today. During the show, John mentioned our first two episodes, episode 1 with Lauren Lamari and episode 2 with Lara Parsons. So be sure to check those out if you haven't already. Don't forget to head over to Instagram and give us a follow at That Season Air Podcast. And as always, check out the show notes for any links relating to today's show. You can now click to subscribe on any podcast platform to get new releases of this show as they come out. So please click and subscribe. A massive thank you to our sponsors Mike's Sports Bar in Meyerhofen, Wandering Woods Coffee in the UK, and of course thank you to Mondo Wave for the music. Thanks for tuning in guys, and I look forward to seeing you all again next time.